The issue in this case is not whether the defendant, Marcus Robinson, committed a heinous murder. That issue has been decided by a jury, and no one disputes that fact. My heart and my prayers go out to the Tornbloom family. Eric Tornbloom was murdered in a brutal and unspeakably horrendous manner, but that is not the issue in this case. The issues in this case are set out in the law, the Racial Justice Act. In enacting the Racial Justice Act, the North Carolina General Assembly made clear that the law of North Carolina rejects the influence of race discrimination in the administration of the death penalty. The RJA represents a landmark reform in capital sentencing in our state. In earlier versions, this legislation was entitled an act to provide for the fair and reliable imposition of capital sentences. Folks, that is what this case is all about. That's what these proceedings are about, the fair and reliable imposition of the death penalty in North Carolina. It's a widely accepted truth, that race discrimination has historically had a distorting effect on national and state policy in every aspect of our private and public lives, including education, housing, employment, and criminal justice. 5 decades after the Civil Rights Act was passed, in the wake of the election of the first African-American president in our nation's history, race still divides us. And the RJA recognizes that the criminal justice system is not immune from this legacy of discrimination in our nation. It has been over 130 years since the United States Supreme Court decided Strada versus West Virginia in 1881. It's been 47 years since Swain versus Alabama, 28 years since Batson versus Kentucky, 27 years since McCleskey versus Kemp. Yet, after all these years, there are still persistent claims and considerable efforts of the continuing effects of racial prejudice in the application of the death penalty. In 2009, the General Assembly of North Carolina accepted the challenge issued by the United States Supreme Court in McCleskey versus Kemp to respond to the will and consequently the moral values of the people when addressing the difficult and complex issue of racial prejudice in the administration of capital punishment. Our legislature did exactly that. The North Carolina legislature passed the Racial Justice Act in 2009. We started hearing evidence in this case in January of 2012. It is now April of 2012, over 130 years since Strada was decided. It has been a long journey from Strada to the present. There are those who disagree with this law, but it is the law, and it is the responsibility of those of us who are part of the criminal justice system to follow the law, to see to it that the law, specifically the death penalty, is administered fairly and reliably in our state. Under the RJA, a capital defendant shall prevail if there is evidence proving that race was a significant factor in decisions to seek or impose the sentence of death in the county, the prosecutorial district, the judicial division, or the state at the time the death sentence was sought or imposed. The RJA identifies 3 different categories of racial disparities the defendant may present in order to meet the significant factor standard, any of which standing alone is sufficient to establish an RJA violation. In this case, the issue is whether race was a significant factor in decisions to exercise peremptory strikes or in jury selection. Notably, the RJA provides a mechanism for proof outside a particular case through statistical evidence. Defendant may use statistical evidence to show that race was a significant factor in the discriminatory exercise of peremptory strikes in the decision to seek or impose the death penalty at any one of 4 prosecutorial levels, statewide, by judicial division, by prosecutorial district, or by county. The state may offer evidence in rebuttal of the claims or evidence of the defendant, including, among other things, statistical evidence. It is clear from the statutory language that the North Carolina General Assembly specifically intended to provide this additional protection above and beyond the limitations on the use of statistical evidence in existing law. It is equally clear that the state may rebut a defendant's evidence through its own statistical evidence or other evidentiary showing. In this case, Robinson relied in large part on statistical evidence presented through a study conducted by Michigan State University researchers. Folks, the findings of fact and conclusions in this case are lengthy. The order is 167 pages long. I am not going to read them in their entirety. I'm simply going to summarize those findings and conclusions and enter the order with the full written findings and conclusions of law in open court at the end of that summary. In summary form, the court finds that the Michigan State University study, hereinafter MSU study, conducted by Drs. O'Brien and Grasso, to be a valid, highly reliable, statistical study of jury selection practices in North Carolina capital cases between 1990 and 2010. The study consists of two parts. The first part is a complete, unadjusted, statewide jury selection study of race and strike decisions for 7,421 Bernier members drawn from the 173 proceedings for the inmates of North Carolina's death row in 2010. Results of the unadjusted study show with remarkable consistency that race is correlated with strike decisions in North Carolina. This consistency was evident, across time, that is, throughout the entire 20-year period, two 10-year periods, and four or five-year periods. It was also consistent at all levels, statewide, by judicial division, prosecutorial districts, and county. Two expert witnesses, Dr. O'Brien and Dr. Woodruff, testified to Robinson regarding the methodology, conclusions, and validity of the MSU study. One expert witness, Dr. Katz, testified for the state. Court finds that the MSU study had a clear research question, which was validly and appropriately informed by the RJA. Specifically, the question is, was race a significant factor in decisions to exercise peremptory challenges by prosecutors in capital cases in North Carolina? The MSU study was comprehensive. It included at least one proceeding for each inmate on North Carolina's death row as of July 1, 2010. Court finds that the study population is valid and appropriate as defined by the language of the statute. The methodology used in the MSU study was exhaustive and meticulous. The study included all Bernier members who were subject to voir dire questioning and who were not excused for cause, including alternates. The researchers were also meticulous in their data collection and coding processes, producing highly transparent and reliable data, all of which was provided to the state in discovery and throughout the proceedings. The results of the unadjusted study show large racial disparities in prosecutorial strike decisions statewide across all strike-eligible Bernier members. Prosecutors struck more than twice as many eligible black Bernier members as compared to all other eligible Bernier members. The probability of this occurring in a race-neutral jury selection process is a, is a staggering number, less than 1 in 10 trillion. The state's own expert, Dr. Katz, agreed that this disparity is statistically significant. The disparity is also observed across prosecutorial districts. Prosecutors struck black Bernier members at a higher rate than other Bernier members in all but three prosecutorial districts in the state. In each of these three districts, there was only one case represented in the MSU study. The same disparity was observed by county. The data by county shows that prosecutors struck black Bernier members at a higher rate than other Bernier members in all but four counties in the state. This disparity is also observed in the former 2nd Judicial Division and current 4th Judicial Division, which includes Cumberland County. In the 8 cases in the study from the current 4th Judicial Division, prosecutors struck eligible Bernier members, or black Bernier members, on average at a rate nearly 3 times the rate of all other eligible Bernier members. In the 37 cases from former 2nd Judicial Division, Prosecutors struck black Gunnar members on average at a rate of more than twice the strike rate for all other Gunnar members. In the 11 cases in the MSU study from Cumberland County, during the time period from 1990 through 2010, prosecutors struck eligible black Gunnar members at an average rate of more than 2.5 times as compared to all other eligible Gunnar members. In Robinson's case, prosecutors struck eligible black Gunnar members at a rate of roughly 3.5 times as compared to all other Gunnar members. Court finds that these disparities observed in the unadjusted data are both statistically significant and substantively important. Based on the testimony presented, the court finds the unadjusted disparities to be enormous with respect to practical significance. Further, the court finds that the MSU study's unadjusted data are consistent with an inference that race was a significant factor in prosecutors' use of peremptory strikes in North Carolina at the time of Robinson's trial, in the former 2nd Judicial Division at the time of Robinson's trial, in Cumberland County at the time of Robinson's trial, and in Robinson's trial itself. The court further finds that the unadjusted disparities against eligible black Gunnar members compared to others are consistently significant to a very high level of reliability, and that there is a very small and insignificant chance that the differences observed in the unadjusted data are due to random variation in the data or chance. Based solely upon the unadjusted analysis of the decisions to peremptorily challenge black Gunnar members, the court finds that race was a materially, practically, and statistically significant factor in decisions to exercise peremptory challenges during jury selection by prosecutors when seeking to impose death sentences in capital cases at the state level at all relevant time periods involved in the MSU study. At the time of Robinson's trial in 1994, in the former 2nd Judicial Division between January 1, 1990 and December 31, 1999, in the former 2nd Judicial Division at the time of Robinson's trial in 1994, in Cumberland County between 1994 and 2007, in Cumberland County at the time of Robinson's trial in 1994, and in Robinson's trial itself. The court further finds that the highly consistent, statistically significant showing of disparities in the unadjusted data is sufficiently strong as to permit an inference of intentional discrimination. At the state level, at the former 2nd Judicial Division level, and at the county level, and during Robinson's trial at all relevant time periods as set out in the full findings of fact and conclusions of law. The second part of the MSU study is a regression study of a 25% random sample drawn from the 7,421 Gunnar member data set that analyzed whether alternative explanations impacted the relationship between race and strike decisions. 25% random sample was generated by a statistical software package commonly relied upon and accepted by social scientists as being accurate, and that sample was subsequently confirmed to be an accurate representation of the statewide population of Gunnar members in terms of race and gender. The adjusted part of the study included detailed coding for additional descriptive information that might bear on prosecutor strike decisions. This controlled analysis examined the question of whether the stark disparities observed in the unadjusted data were affected in any way by factors that correlate with race, but that may themselves be race neutral. Strict protocols were established and used at all times to ensure the accuracy of the information included in the database. The adjusted part of the MSU study also included a regression study of 100% of the Gunnar members from the Cumberland County cases. The researchers conducted a descriptive coding study of all 471 Gunnar members in the Cumberland County cases. This additional descriptive coding included factors that are frequently cited as explanations given by prosecutors for strike decisions. The researchers used both cross-tabulation and logistic regression methodologies to explore the relationship between possible explanatory variables and the observed racial disparities. Under the cross-tabulation method, Bernard members with particular characteristics were excluded from consideration. These characteristics included Bernard members who had death penalty reservations, Bernard members who had been accused of crime, or who had a close relative or friend who had been accused of a crime, unemployed Bernard members, Bernard members who knew someone involved in the trial, and Bernard members who had any one of these characteristics. Those factors were chosen for two reasons. First, a researcher's review of Batson litigation indicated that these were race-neutral explanations commonly given by prosecutors when the issue of discriminatory challenges was raised. Second, the factors were commonly considered to be factors that would make a Bernard member less attractive to the prosecution. The purpose was to determine whether removal of Bernard members who had any one or more of these characteristics would cause the racial disparities seen in the unadjusted analysis to disappear for the remaining Bernard members. Researchers found that removal of these Bernard members did not affect the link between race and prosecutor strength decisions. After removal of Bernard members who had any one of these characteristics from the 25% statewide random sample, prosecutors still struck approximately twice as many Black Bernard members than all other Bernard members. When unemployed Bernard members were removed from consideration, prosecutors still struck almost twice as many of the remaining Black Bernard members as compared to all other Bernard members. When Bernard members who had been accused of crime or were close to another who had been accused of a crime were removed from consideration, prosecutors still struck more than twice as many Black Bernard members as compared to all other Bernard members. When Bernard members who knew one of the participants in the trial were removed, prosecutors still struck more than twice as many Black Bernard members as compared to all other Bernard members. When Bernard members who expressed some form of reservation about the death penalty were removed, prosecutors still struck more than twice as many Black Bernard members as compared to all other Bernard members. The court finds that in each of the above instances, the probability of observing a racial disparity of this magnitude in a race-neutral jury selection process is statistically significant. The researchers also used a logistic regression analysis, which allows one to disentangle multiple factors that might bear on the strike decision outcome by controlling for possible factors that correlate with race to ensure that a particular non-racial factor is not driving the strike decision as opposed to race. The study used a widely accepted statistical software package to identify 12 factors with predictive value. The court finds that each of these 12 variables is a potential alternative explanation for apparent race-based disparities, and each is highly representative of the explanations given by prosecutors as factors used in their exercise of peremptory strikes. After fully controlling for the 12 non-racial variables, the race of a Bernard member is still statistically significant. Strike rate ratios observed in the adjusted study are essentially the same as those in the unadjusted study. The court finds that the odds of a Black Bernard member being struck by the state, even after controlling for race-neutral variables, is significantly higher than the odds of other Bernard members being struck. The adjusted regression analysis results show that none of the explanations for strikes frequently offered by prosecutors or cited in published opinions, such as death penalty views, criminal backgrounds, employment, diminish the robust and highly consistent findings that race is significantly correlated with strike decisions in North Carolina. Dr. O'Brien testified, and the court finds as a fact, that no regression analysis model with any combination of non-racial potential explanatory variables was ever identified that revealed the predictive effect of race to be attributable to any non-racial or racial variable. court further finds as a fact that in North Carolina and in Cumberland County, being black does predict whether or not the state will strike a benign verdict, even when holding constant or controlling for non-racial variables that do affect strike decisions. When those predictive non-racial variables are controlled for, the effect of race upon the state's use of peremptory challenges is not simply a compound of something that is correlated with race or associated with race. Race affects the state's peremptory strike decisions independent of the other predictive non-racial factors. Finally, the findings of the fully controlled logistic analysis performed by MSU researchers are consistent with other jury studies that have been completed in the United States, including the Philadelphia County study, which was a similar study. The findings are also consistent with a study performed by Mary Rose in Durham, North Carolina, and a study by the Dallas Morning News of jury selection in Texas. In rebuttal, the state offered the testimony of its expert, Dr. Katz. Dr. Katz testified that, in his opinion, the design of the MSU study is flawed. The state's argument is that the population of interest should have included all 696 capitally tried cases is rejected by the court. The state's expert, Dr. Katz, never offered any explanation as to why the state strike decisions in these cases would or could differ from the 173 cases analyzed by the MSU study. More importantly, the state, through the database provided by the MSU researchers to Dr. Katz, had the opportunity to conduct the analysis he advocated and failed to do so. The court rejects this criticism. Dr. Katz performed his own calculations of the disparities in strike rates reflected in the unadjusted study. And he reached the same conclusions as Dr. O'Brien and Dr. Woodward. Further, he testified that he agreed that these large disparities required additional investigation and that the disparities essentially satisfied Robinson's prima facie burden. Dr. Katz also testified about what he perceived to be problems with the adjusted regression analysis conducted by the MSU researchers. Specifically, he testified about problems he had with the study's variable definitions. The court does not find these criticisms to have merit for the reasons that are set out more fully in the written order. Dr. Katz testified that he was able to produce statistical models using the MSU data that did not show a statistically significant correlation between race and the exercise of peremptory strikes. He conceded, however, that these models were not appropriately constructed and are of no explanatory value. Consequently, the court gives no weight to these models. The state also offered affidavits from prosecutors providing purported race-neutral explanations for peremptory strikes against black benign members in the cases involved in the study. Only approximately 50% of the prosecutors in the state responded to requests by Dr. Katz to provide those affidavits. Of that number, only approximately one half of the affidavits submitted were from prosecutors who were actually involved in the cases they reviewed. The court allowed these affidavits over Robinson's objection. In some instances, prosecutor affidavits indicated that the reviewers could not determine any race neutral reasons for the strikes. In others, the court finds that the reasons given were patently irrational or pretextual. In still others, the court finds that the prosecutor's characterization of the voir dire answers of peremptorily challenged black benign members was inaccurate or misleading. And yet, other affidavits, the court finds that the prosecutor affiants relied upon reasons that were in themselves improper or unconstitutional. The court finds that these affidavits are insufficient to rebut the evidence presented by Robinson. In sum, the state's evidence not only failed to rebut Robinson's evidentiary showing, but in many respects reinforced and strengthened it. And this is the first case to advance to an evidentiary hearing under the Racial Justice Act. The court finds that Robinson introduced a wealth of evidence showing the persistent, pervasive, and distorting role of race in jury selection throughout North Carolina. That evidence is largely unrebutted by the state, and the court finds that the evidence presented requires relief in his case and should serve as a clear signal of the need for reform in capital jury selection proceedings in the future. Based upon the findings of fact and conclusions of law, as contained in the written order of the court, court finds and concludes that the defendant has met his burden of proving that race was a significant factor in decisions to exercise peremptory challenges during jury selection by prosecutors at all relevant times in North Carolina, in Cumberland County, and during the time of his trial. Court further finds that the state has failed to rebut the evidence presented by Robinson. Court further finds that prosecutors have intentionally discriminated against black veneer members during jury selection at all relevant times when seeking to impose death sentences in capital cases and in Robinson's case. It is well known that prejudices often exist against particular classes in the community, which sway the judgment of jurors and which therefore operate in some cases to deny to persons of those classes the full enjoyment of that protection which others enjoy. Defendants are harmed, of course, when racial discrimination in jury selection compromises the right of trial by impartial jury. But racial minorities are harmed more generally. For prosecutors, drawing racial lines and picking jurors establish state-sponsored group stereotypes rooted in or reflective of historical prejudice. Nor is the harm confined to minorities. When the government's choice of jurors is tainted with racial bias, that overt wrong casts doubt over the obligation of the parties, the jury, and indeed the court to adhere to the law throughout the trial. The very integrity of the court is jeopardized when a prosecutor's discrimination invites cynicism respecting the jury's neutrality and undermines public confidence in adjudication. That language, folks, comes from quotes in cases decided by the United States Supreme Court dealing with the issue of discrimination in jury selection. These cases go back over 100 years, and yet the problem of discriminatory exclusion of African Americans from the jury selection process continues into the 21st century. These quotes highlight the harm that results not just to defendants and excluded jurors, but to the entire community. They are an acknowledgement that selection procedures that purposefully exclude one segment of our society from juries undermines public confidence in the fairness of our system of justice, fairness and reliability in the imposition of capital sentences. That is what this case is about. That is what promotes confidence in our system of justice. It has been a long journey. The Racial Justice Act will not be the end of this journey, but it is the hope of this court that we are now at the beginning of the end of the long struggle to eliminate discrimination in our system of justice.